Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Weber at StuWeb.com, and it is Sunday, February the 14th, 2021. And to those out there having Valentine's Day, have a good one, but I can't say I'm having one. Now, I've got Professor Paul on, Professor Joe, and Jeff, financial expert, and we're having a roundtable discussion here again today. And Paul wants to bring it off and lead it with some treason and sedition. We're going to be talking about Davos. Joe wants to talk about it, how we're going to own nothing. And I want Jeff to get into the financial realm of things here as well. So with that said, welcome, Paul.
Hey, thank you. I want to start with insurrection, sedition, the overthrow of the United States government, and it's not just one side that's in on it, it's a duopoly. And I think that there is so much disinformation out there that people want to believe that, well, there's some forces that are working to save America. And right now, I think civil war is coming, and I'm not sure if it's 30 days off, 60 days off, 6 months off, but the shadow government has planned for this, and we have been divided in such a manner that people have literally lost their minds. I mean, we are living in an asylum. But I just want to read from the United States Code, 18 United States Code, Chapter 115, Treason, Sedition, Subversive Activities. And just start with how the U.S. federal law describes insurrection. Insurrection is for whoever incites, sets on foot, assists, or engages in any rebellion or insurrection against the authority of the United States or the laws thereof, or gives aid or comfort thereto, shall be defined under this title, or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and shall be incapable of holding any office. All right, but it goes further. If two or more persons in any state or territory, or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, conspire to overthrow, put down, or to destroy by force the government of the United States, or to levy war against, or to oppose. Well, there's a lot of feedback on my end, guys, so I don't know if this is going to work, because there's just echoes going. But anyway, where we are is anyone who levies war against or opposes by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States, by force seize, take, or possess any property of the United States contrary to the authority thereof. Now it gets even better. Whoever knowingly or willingly advocates, abets, advises, or teaches the duty, necessarily, desirability, or proprietary of overthrowing or destroying the government of the United States, or the government of any state, territory, district, or possession thereof, or the government, any political subdivision therefor of, by force, violence, by the assassination of any officer of such government, whoever with intent to cause the overthrow, destruction of any such government, prints, publishes, edits, issues, circulates, sells, distributes, or publicly displays any written or print material advocating, advising, or teaching the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying any government in the United States by force or violence, or attempts to do so, whoever organizes or helps or attempts to organize any society, group, or assembly of persons who teach, advocate, encourage the overthrow or destruction of any such government by force, violence, or becomes or is a member or affiliates with any such society, group, or persons knowingly the purposes thereof under Section 18 of the United States Code, Chapter 115, who conspired to overthrow the 2020 election is guilty of insurrection, sedition, or treason. Now, I only took the time, the trouble to read all of that. That produced an article by Molly Bell, or Bell, or Bell, or something close. You know, it's all phony. And I suppose if we did an anagram, we could figure out exactly what they were trying to say. But I think it's Bell is the whole point. So Time Magazine publishes this article, and it talks about how, well, Donald Trump was right. The election was stolen. But we had the moral obligation to make sure that he didn't get elected. You see, because people's votes don't really count, and if we need to steal an election, it's really okay. So essentially, what did they admit to in Time Magazine? Well, they admitted to everything I just read. Sedition, insurrection, and treason. Now, why would they do that? Well, certainly they're bragging, yes. And they're absolutely mocking all of us. And, you know, guys, I think it's well known. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. Hey, I've had my issues with Tromboni forever. And actually, I've never voted for winning or losing. Or even a third-party candidate. I was tempted to vote for Ross Perot. I almost did it. All I had to do was walk across the street. I didn't do it. I take some, it's troubling that I was never able to vote for a winning or a losing or a third-party candidate. But why couldn't I? Well, because it's a duopoly in Washington, D.C., and they're all in on it. And that includes Donald Trump. And I only watched about a 30 minute, not a third, help, God help me. Man, that was just, I flipped through the channel, but I actually caught, and I don't know if God wanted to do this or not, but I think maybe he did. And you got Trump's attorney saying, if anyone participates in this, if anyone participates this and knowingly, you guys, I'm sorry, I've got to turn it over to you guys here for a minute. I'm sorry, I got to sign off here for a second. I'll be back. Sorry.
Joe, you want to pick up on that?
Yeah. There is also a very interesting thing that is the corollary, but it's the opposite. And one of the things that... what gives the government the right to do what they do? And Stu and I go way, 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 way back in the early 90s when the Patriot movement was in its full swing in common law. And there is a very interesting point that many of these patriots participated in. And what they did simply was to go by what is called the Freeman's Oath. And the Freeman's Oath was common law way back. Stu, do you remember North Davis?
I don't remember the name right offhand. It's not striking.
Okay, but he was one of the early guys that got into, he was very big here in Phoenix, called the Oath of a Freeman. And Lord Davis Jr. went back and searched for it, and they found it, and it was in the 16th century, or rather the 17th century. And here is just a few words from it. Now, remember, the word is consent. Then where does the government get its idea that they can do what they want to do? I, being of God's providence, an inhabitant and freeman, with the jurisdiction of this commonwealth, I freely acknowledge myself be subject to the government and thereof, and do have, let's see, by the great and dreadful name of our Father, Lord God, I will, let's see.
You there, Joe?
I saw me, yeah, she's, let me get my glasses here. Okay. I faithfully and to consume and fill according to the assistance of that I do consent to my government, to my governance. In other words, that was an oath in which you consent. You consent. But that means you cannot consent. And so what Paul was saying, he was referring to the opposite of when a government becomes ungovernable, like the stealing of an election. So this Freedman's Oath is a reminder that we have consented, that's all. We haven't done anything else. And this relates to, for instance, one of the things that is very important to people in this country is private property. And one of the things that Larry Mizell did was to steal mortgages. And to this day, it still goes on. It's called derivatives. They bundle up your mortgage and sell it. Tell that little story, Stu, about that woman that you helped when she discovered that her home had been sold from under her, I believe it was Denver?
Yeah, Michelle. She, I helped her, and I put her on the air, and I even put stuff up on the site. Was threatened by attorneys and everything. Wild. But it's still partially up there. But she wanted the story taken down because she was taking so much heat, they were trying to kill her. But what happened was her husband died. They had bought a home together, and they were in there for a few years, and all of a sudden he gets some kind of cancer, and he ends up dead in a short period of time. Well, her home had insurance to pay off any bills, that is, to pay off the loan on the house, and they had that in there intentionally in case something ever happened to either one of them. And so anyway, the house was paid off. So she had contacted the loan company and everything, contacted the insurance company, and as far as she knew, that they had taken care of it. And then they turned around and they're telling her that the mortgage had been sold. In the meantime, she goes and hires some attorney who happened to appear on Alex Jones's show, and she got screwed by him, typical character, from Colorado. So she was kind of left out in the open, and she came to me and asked me for some help because she knew what the story was. And what happened, folks, prior to bank bailout in 2008, it actually started when Daddy Bush was CIA director, and one of his CIA attorneys, Norman Brownstein, that was a Denver attorney for my ex-witch doctor's father, Leonard Millman, that was the Jewish crime syndicate that owned Silverado Savings, where Neil Bush was laundering money, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Larry Mizell took over for Millman when he died, and this alien, fallen angel, as Otis Johnson, Super Spook said, whatever lived in your ex-father-in-law, Stu, lived for thousands of years, and now it's inhabiting Larry Mizell, because he was chosen by them, the Council of Twelve, they call him, the 12 Disciples of Satan. Now, Mizell came up with, and Bush and Millman came up with, and Bush and them, and they played this game in Cherry Creek in the 1970s. And where Littleton is, out in that area. And they did it with some people on mortgages to test and see if they could get away with it. And they were writing artificial mortgages on these houses and then saying they own the mortgage, when in fact they had the mortgage company and they were seeing whether they could get away with it, and they did it. So before bank bailout, they really cranked it up was around 2000. And Mizell went nuts, and you can see it on the front of StuWeb.com because I whistle blew on him, and I even filed charges later with the SEC because that's the only way that anything happened. And it turns out to be that basically from my information, J.P. Morgan got fined about $16 billion. Mizell got fined about $2.5 billion. The SEC still owes me a reward for the finding, should we say, because they do pay rewards where the IRS just credits you against your income tax, but I've never been paid on that, like being locked up 10 and a half months, never been paid. That was $20 million in damages. There's some damages to be collected. But here's the deal. On the front, you'll see SEC's, and it shows Mizell and Brownstein's pictures. These are two APEC directors that sat on the board of Silverado with Larry Mizell, I mean, with Neil Bush, laundering all the drug money from Iran-Contra, including MENA, Arkansas, with Clintons. Now, these guys came up with this idea, let's do this mortgage thing even deeper. So they started it around 2000, and by the time 2018 came, and I figured out what they had done, and some others, including Otis's help, I got it to where it jammed them, and it came public, to where they had to have a bailout. It was big. Hell, they bailed them out about $45 billion in the first round. And it was written about in one of the papers, San Francisco Chronicles or something up there wrote about it. And then there were other bank bailouts during the period of time that the American people never knew. Plus, they were covering their butts. And what they did is they turned them all into derivatives from fake mortgages. And they were passing the mortgages and selling the mortgages from Goldman Sachs was buying them. Everybody was buying them. And they were passing them. And then all of a sudden, bank bailout comes, and bam, they're holding $1 trillion with the fake mortgages they created, folks. Fake mortgages. They duplicated your mortgage. People don't know this, but Asset Investors of Denver is a subsidiary of MDC. Asset this, asset that, asset this, asset that. They were the ones buying up the mortgages around the country, and then they duplicated them. And then they caught, and then they hit them again. And they ran these things on these particular mortgages up to 9 times. They threw them out open. Then when bank bailout came, here's what happened to Michelle, as an example. You know, her husband dies, the house is paid off, but oh no, we own your mortgage. And they come in and target her because she was a widow and she was easy to slam down. And they stole her equity out from underneath her by saying they owned her mortgage. And they didn't own her mortgage. They didn't buy their mortgage. They're actually the ones holding the mortgage on it because they got all the money. But they come back to you and say, oh, no, this other entity over here, XYZ Mortgage Company, owns your mortgage, and they bought it in a sale of mortgages where they sell them in big blocks. No, that's not true. I'm paying my mortgage over here. But you're paying your mortgage to the crook that's trying to take your equity away from you, and you really don't know it. And you got a set of attorneys over here filing in court to take your mortgage because they own it now. They bought it. But over here, your mortgage company is supposed to protect you and all the other stuff. They're saying, no, we're not going to send the attorneys in. So you have to hire your own attorney. It costs you out of your pocket. And they're still getting judgments against you, take your house and kicking you out. And they've done it to 12 million people, folks, after bank bailout. Now, this was up to about 2016 or 2018, I believe it was. There was up to about 12 million people had been kicked out of their homes because of Larry Mizell's artificial mortgages. Now, if you go in and look at a finding paid Asset Investors, it's on the front of my site about the SEC and the bank bailout. There's the information on my filing that I did with the SEC. Now, I think it probably cost Larry Mizell about $2.5 billion. I stuck him out there in the limelight. Is nothing compared to $100 trillion he stole, and now they've stolen 12 million houses plus? How much does that add up to? And you, we take a number. Let's take a number, because I think it says it all. The General Accounting Office said in 1980, 1% of the population controlled 20% of the U.S. economy. 1% of the population. How many is that number at the time? Let's call it 280 million people or something, 1%. We're in control of 20%. 99% of us were in control of that 80% block in 1981. Then the General Accounting Office, which is the watchdog for the Congress and Senate, takes all its numbers from IRS, Comptroller of Currency, etc. And they said in June of 2012, the 400 men now control 95% of the U.S. economy. 400 men. That's reduced down from 1%, and they're controlling 95%. And then they've got between Fidelity Financial, Norman Brownstein, one of these two directors of AIPAC, law school buddies in 72, Milman's Little Stooges, Daddy Bush's CIA counsel, he runs Fidelity. They control 40-some-odd percent of the pension funds. And then right after bank bailout, I noticed Larry Mizell's Great West Life, that was Power Financial, Meyer Lansky, then Leonard Milman, then Larry Mizell in charge, which is the Great West Life, by the way, folks, was involved in massive amounts of financial fraud, including Imperial Savings and Loan, Western Savings that collapsed, the whole bit. That was all subsidiaries of Great West Life of Denver. Now, Great West Life of Denver owns HSBC Bank, Hongxiang Bank something Bancorp, largest bank in the world. And they're always getting caught. Narcotic money laundering, terrorist money laundering. They were caught recently in the press about it. Now, they were the ones laundering the money for Silverado. It ended up going through there. And then buying up, going to Switzerland through certain banks and buying up through Isley Brokerage of Reno and Las Vegas. They were buying up America with discretionary accounts with Isley. And Isley's one of these pedophiles that used to go around on his ranch and let Daddy Bush and Cheney chase little kids around with their shotguns without any pants on. They go out there and rape them and kill them. That was Reno and Isley Brokerage Las Vegas. And Isley Brokerage Las Vegas is right there where Daddy Bush took over the guy that had Grumman Aerospace, which was Otis's partner. And the other partner was an Israeli colonel, the partner of Grumman. Jerry Henderson had a big secret underground base there. And he had two houses in there. They rented it out after his death. They killed him because he opened his mouth over the fact that the Bill of Ladings on F-16 and F-4, A-1 tank bombers, airplanes, A-1 I think they called, the tank busters. He had shipped a bunch of them over to Iraq before Gulf War I. And he said, something's wrong about this. And it turned out to be Daddy Bush was stealing them. And he went opened his mouth about it and killed him. Selling them illegally to Iraq and Iran. But the mortgage bank game, they own everything now. And it's worldwide. Go ahead, Joe.
Guys, I think we've got here's what I wanted to focus on, and I think the information that you just shared is really important, and it should be well documented, and it does make the bigger point that there is no rule of law, and there really hasn't been rule of law, functioning civil institutions, court systems, and beyond, and there's not any civic society anymore. We have been thoroughly divided, and I am arguing that Time Magazine, generally it used to have a pretty wide circulation. Now I think it's largely internet-based, but they made the point that they stole the election. And they stole the election, and they bragged about it, and then they mocked everyone that is still believing that there is an America. And I don't know if we can, you know, if we need to go stick with Stu's theme and go on with that, I'm good with it, except that what I was trying to get to is that we are being set up for civil war, and I don't know if it's going to happen in the next 60 days, 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, but it's not far off, people. And what I wanted to bring in was a guy named Martin Armstrong. But before I do, Joffrey, you've listened a lot. Do we have anything that you can summarize or point us to at this point?
No, I like what you're talking about. I circle back to what we're originally discussed with the. I do know that there's a bill that's being proposed. And I want to say Title 127, don't even quote me on it, I don't know, but I recall hearing a little bit about it, but it sounded like it was designed that if you were possibly a minority, that you could challenge a person who might be a white person for their job. Don't qualify, due to the fact of privilege, the white person would have to step out or bow out of that position. and again, I need to look at that a little closer, but you were talking about the vision, and that would just be one other thing. Talk about dividing things down to just, they don't really leave any stone unturned. They're looking for anything to create conflict, racial conflict, tension. It's just, yeah, there's just nothing that isn't out there they haven't looked into to create that point to where now everybody's to the point where they're so fed up, and yet the rule of law is abused at the top visibly to become more frustrated when you're a little peon. But look at that guy, like you've used the analogy, he just threw a brick through the window. He threw the brick through the window, but he sent his neighbor through his brick through his own window. And they haul your neighbor off because he, you know, I mean, we're to the point to where it's insanity is exactly what you're getting to. Like, how do you function in a society when one person sits on the sidewalk and they haul him off to jail, the other guy right in front of him sits on the sidewalk and they pat him on the back? I mean, there is no consistency. You can't have any kind of, I mean, like changing the game of the rules in the game of tennis or basketball halfway through, you change the rules to your, you know, however you want the game to be finished. There just is no continuity or consistency in that rule of law. And people need rules. They need to function within guidelines. It'd be like getting your car, well, now all of a sudden it's the one way from east and west, now you're going north and south. I mean, there are things you have to comply with. And I get that. So anyway, I guess that's my work, listening to what you guys are talking about. There's a lot of frustration now at these lower levels of, hey, we're just trying to exist. We're just trying to live. But you're changing the rules on this guy. They're changing the rules all the time on us. So anyway, I ranted a little bit, but yeah, to your point.
Well, I need a little bit of direction now from you guys, because I think I got interrupted, and I don't know why it always happens that when I try and do a show that I have to take 2 minutes to try and deal with some confusion that, anyway, it's also crazy, but I think we're heading to a civil war. And I don't know if it's the direction you guys want to go, but I just want to talk about a guy named Martin Armstrong, and then I'm going to sign off here. Almost half of Americans believe that civil war is coming. And there's a guy named Martin Armstrong, and he has a AI algorithm called Socrates. And there's a couple of people that I still actually listen to, Martin Armstrong being one of them. And curiously, there's a guy named Steve Bannon. And the reason I listen to Steve Bannon is because way back in the late 80s, I started talking about a fourth turning. And the fourth turning means America goes through cycles, but it's not just America. Every society, every civilization goes through phases. And basically what I was saying back in the mid-80s is that we were going to have the fourth turning and we were going to have civil war in America. Now, I must admit that my popularity at that point, or the interest in what I had to say, was people were very skeptical. And maybe rightly so. And, you know, as late as 1989, they were saying, well, so when do you think this is going to happen, Paul? And I said, well, I think it could happen as early as 2000. And that was within 10 years hence. And that brings me back to Kansas City, because all I can say is that I was told by my advisors, professors, well, that'll never get published here. And I thought, well, that's no surprise. But anyway, Martin Armstrong has this Socrates AI, and he wouldn't give it up and spent about 38 months in jail. And here's what Martin Armstrong says, and we don't have to stick with this. I just wanted to get through this today. The Patriots are no longer in Washington. The Patriots are now the enemy from Washington's perspective. And Armstrong goes on to say, Socrates, the AI that I have, will be right, and to my disappointment, the USA will break up and will never be the land of freedom again. What these people are doing, and he's talking not just about the Democrats or the liberals or the left or give them whatever you name. He's talking about the right. He's talking about the rhinos. He's talking about that element too, meaning we have been totally bamboozled that in any way there was a two-party system. There is not a two-party system in America. And what both sides are doing collectively is tearing down every piece of fabric that once made the United States the land of opportunity and the beacon and liberty of the world. And anyway, Armstrong then goes on to just make the point I just made, that you may think this is unique, but history repeats, because corruption in government, criminality, and kleptocracy always give the same result. Now, I would take it a step further and say we are in a war about our faith and our beliefs versus a different doctrine, and it is a Luciferian secular humanism. It is about give the power to the state and the people behind the curtain. They care about us, right? And I just want to finish my part, and then I'll sign off here. Right now, I'm reading that in addition to the American flag embassies, we now get the gay pride or the LGBTQ flag flown right next to it. So at every embassy in the world, I am told, the Secretary of State of the United States has now ordered that there be two flags. So the United States stands for a couple things, and it's criminality, corruption, and kleptocracy, and LGBTQ. So we're not going to turn this thing around, you guys, and that's what I needed to get out for today's show. But if we need to go a different direction, I'm amenable. Thanks for the opportunity to express myself.
Go ahead, Joe or Jeff. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd comment on that with Armstrong. That is astute, and I think that he, being a cycles person, you know, he watches for these patterns and trends. It's not just him, it's Socrates, like you mentioned. It's the AI that looks for these trends. Kind of getting back to your point, Stu, about where things are financially. Martin Armstrong would say, I'm not going to quote him directly, but he would say that the system, the government, everything rests upon the financial structure and strength of your government securities. And if you have a problem with your government paper, and it's a, you know, it's a tier one asset, if you have problems with those, with that asset, everything else resting upon that asset has the propensity, you know, it has the potential to be devalued or destroyed. So part of the problem is these governments have extended their borrowing to the point that there's really nothing else that they can identify that they can get their hands on. So the replication or duplication of selling the same things over, like you mentioned, Stu, packaging mortgages and selling them once and twice, maybe three times in packaged tranches that get packaged and sold to firms because they give off a yield, and somebody's getting that yield and they're buying that yield. You can really play a nutshell game with assets. I mean, you can have that so hard to identify who really owns it, but you don't know. But that's what made America unique. You could legally track, identify an asset, tag it, know what you own. You could legally have that ability, and that's what separated us from the other countries. We had a system that could identify that tract of land, and it could monitor the depth and the length and the exact down to the last acre, the last inch.
And you got title companies to ensure that when you buy it, that it's clear. The title's clear. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So that ability made us unique. Now, when you've even, I've even heard, you know, the possibility that there's been gold bars and they have a code, they have a number on the bars, where even some of these bars would be sold to duplicate owners. So it isn't just mortgages. It's stretching the system to the point to where there's, what else can you own? But then when you start fudging what the titlement of that ownership is, then you run into some real issues. Somebody else says, hey, I got a claim. So Germany says, I got a claim on those gold bars. And wait a minute, what's the serial number on the bar. Well, this. Well, wait a minute. Somebody over in Egypt owns that same bar. So unless these people call for these assets to be delivered, we're recirculating a lot of the same paper and a lot of the same assets. So speeding that up today, we're seeing that transition to where we talked about this before, and I don't want to get too far off the subject, but how do you then move to the next frontier? What's the new frontier of ownership? If you're going to get rid of the system you live in now, what is the transition to? And we've touched on this on the show, and we probably don't need to go into that right now, but that's a future show possibly. But anyway, I agree with what you're saying, Paul, and I agree with what Armstrong's saying. He's seen this pattern before. It's not new. It replicates itself. It's partly human nature, and we're in an interesting time. There is no doubt about it financially.
Now, you know, here's what's been interesting. You know, I spent 10.5 months in jail for opening my mouth. And I caused 4 congressional investigations. Nobody had ever done that. As Al Martin said, if you do one, they'll want to kill you. You do 4, you're dead. Well, I'm still breathing. Now, those were 4 of them back to back. And then I caused bank bailout. And there was a couple other scandals I don't want to talk about that I was involved that helped bring it to light. Now, every financial scandal since I've been looking at this in 1986, looking at this ex-wife witch doctor that I was married to's father, and the shit he had. It just, I mean, I spent $50,000, which I still have the evidence to prove with the phone bills, between 1986 and 1991 investigating them. It was 28.5 cents a minute or something like that back then, long distance. Investigating. I used to have to dig without doing it on the computer. You can now go to the Secretary of State for the state of Colorado, as an example. In the business section, you could punch in Dominion Software. There's Norman Brownstein. You just have to know what names to go by. They've never ran it by the name of the person. They've run it by these corporate names. Now, I don't know whether you can punch in a name and get an association yet anymore, but they took that out for a while. Now, they used to bury their trust over at the Colorado Bureau of Revenue. They would register him there, and Brownstein showed up all over the place, and that's the way I used to do business. Now they don't have that with the trusts anymore. You got to go back to Secretary of State's office. They've covered it up again. But punch in Global Dominion Software. It goes back to my ex-witch doctor's father's businesses that now Larry Mizell controls. Now, Dominion, someone got sued. Why would they sue one of their own to do the same thing maybe that they have done to Jim Fetzer pertaining to Sandy Hook, and they're doing it with Giuliani to bring down Lynn Wood and others about the fraud that went on during the election? Yeah, that's the way they play. But every financial fraud, it's been Robin Hood. They've been Robin Hood since 1979-80, right in that time frame, and the USDA. Low-income housing, they're controlling everything. They were getting 8 out of 10 deals out of HUD during all the 80s when Daddy Bush was vice president, and they put Phil Wynn up there to be the cook for him. He was one that was on the board of directors of MDC Holdings, still is, the parent company of Silverado Savings and Loan, the parent company of Asset Investors that did the mortgage fraud. And assets this and assets that. They run this MDC Holdings Corp as one of the big giants. Now, I forgot how many subsidiaries they've created out of it. All the Keating assets from Lincoln Savings, over $12 billion, got absorbed into that company in a 6-month period of time. All the money from BCCI was absorbed into that company for a period of time as they were pleading guilty to a $200,000 fine in a court in Phoenix, Arizona, committing frauds upon the court, saying they were in bankruptcy, and they submitted a document that said that one of their MDC land company was in, and make it look like their parent company, and it wasn't. Now, they're always doing a fraud and getting away with it, and there's no place to take them. The only reason Keating went to jail is because I helped put him there, along with some others. Brian Quigg in Arizona, some others down in Arizona helped put him in jail. We worked with a rock law firm out of San Diego that had the lawsuit against him in Lincoln Savings. Now, very few people went to jail, but this guy at HUD Phil Wynn. He goes up there, steals all the stuff, and I get a hearing on him, and he pleads guilty and pays a $2.5 million fine or some shit, and he's facing 6 to 8 years in prison. And he goes back before the judge in Denver to be sentenced, and the judge is the same one, Feinstein, the cover-up meister, Larry and Daddy and Leonard Mellon's good buddy, the one who put me in jail illegally, issued warrants for me. He lets old Phil Wynn have a sealed case. He remains free at large for 11 years, and then Bill Clinton gives him a presidential pardon the day before he leaves office. This is how they cover up for each other. They never spend time in jail. If they do, it's a very short period of time. Now, we could take Norman Brownstein's son, was in trouble a while back, and one of the six CIA counsels, including him to Daddy Bush, represent him. His name is Natale. And you can punch in Norman Brownstein on my website. You probably see the article on his son. His son was involved in mass stock fraud. His partner went to jail for 5 years. Brownstein himself told his son to do those things. And they had it in recordings. The feds did. Nobody went to jail, Brownstein's son. Instead, he ran off with the money. He went to his under lockdown at his house with a bracelet, supposedly, for 6 months. And that's his punishment. During the period of time that he was supposedly broke, he buys the Bank of California with the loot he stole. That's an example. He walked free. There's no justice. There's no way. Now, they've robbed HUD. They did the savings and loans for, God, about $3 trillion. They did bank bailout for $100 trillion. They're getting $8 out of $10 out of HUD. That means almost every apartment complex. They grew under AIMCO, A-I-M-C-O, Terry Considine, the criminal, Leonard Millman's cut, front out, buffer, they call him. He had up to 500,000 apartment units under the umbrella of the AIMCO when I blew them apart. Now they've reduced it down to about half or 300,000. That each apartment being a unit. That's how many they owned. And they gathered that under AIMCO in about a 10-year period of time, robbing HUD, and Phil Wynn walks. They walk away with all the S&L money. They walk away with bank bailout, Global Crossings, as an example, back in the 1990s. They sold Global Crossings, the assets, to a Chinese company that owns the Panama Canal. It's called Hutchinson Wample Snags Global Crossing. Now, that's the old drug money, and from who's on the board of directors? Norman Brownstein. Okay? And another cat and gator, the chairman of the Democratic Party, Terry McAuliffe, Bill Clinton's boy. These people have drugged America. They're still drugging America. That's the reason we have a war in Afghanistan, because of the heroin that comes out of there. And John McCain, who served on the Armed Services Committee, his wife is guilty of treason and sedition, narcotics trafficking, participating in it by selling the chemicals to a dry cleaning plant in Afghanistan. A dry cleaner. In the middle of a war zone, troops are going to go out there dry clean their clothes. No, they don't. They wash them by hand. But the drones they use, constantly coming back here, were landed over here in Missouri, and someone that witnessed it, who was in the military, said that they changed the location to Hollywood, Florida, to the air base there. Who owned the hangar there? L. Millman and N. Bush owned the hangar. Was in his name when he died. That's what it showed on the deed. That's where they bring the drugs in, part of it. Part of it comes into Fort Worth, Texas. Dallas E-Systems comes into right there where Joe's at, down there in Arizona at their Indian reservation. And they're drugging America. They've sold out America. They control the Congress and Senate. They're all blackmailed and bribed. And we're going to have to do something about it. They just committed treason and sedition in the eyes of the people by throwing Donald Trump out the door. Jeff, Joe, Paul, you want to comment? What are we going to do? Any one of you care to comment? What do the people need to do? I see maybe recall petitions getting real heavy on all the politicians. Also see what their game plan is. They think they're going to vaccinate everybody, and they're going to, half the people, or not half, but 4,000 are dead from the vaccinations already. They got it within 2 weeks, dying of heart attacks. You think they're going to put that in you, and it's going to melt down your immune system from these proteins within 36 to 42 months, you're going to be dead. And it's got your chip in it, the mark of the beast. So the question is, what are we as Americans, patriots, Christians, going to do about it?
Well, I think you ask a great question there. What I see is a huge setup, and the shadow government has planned for civil war. They've got a fifth column here, and the fifth column includes migrants who've been praying, drug dealers, includes Somali warlords, gang members. It includes a bunch of people that have been programmed multiples. And the shadow government, I mean, what is behind the scenes is so significant. And the best I can do is call it a fifth column. And I apologize to everyone. I'm just a step off this morning.
Paul, if I can interrupt you just for a minute. You know, you mentioned something about the gang members. I was locked up, folks, in Denver, Colorado, where a lot of money got laundered through Silverado. And Daddy Bush got caught, that is, Iran-Contra. It was coming up his rear end. He gave presidential pardons to Cap Weinberger and Ollie North and all of them on New Year's Eve, or Christmas Eve, of 1992. I helped Ross Perot smash Daddy Bush out of office. Ross Perot came back later, smashed Denver for me. Milman paid an $80 million fine. Mizell paid $10 million. Brownstein paid $10 million. And Fred Rico Pena had to resign as the Secretary of Energy because he was under indictment. Now, he got a $2.5 million bribe for his Denver airport from Phil Wynn. And they had the proof and evidence. But he got to keep $1.5 million of it, and he paid $1 million fine. And he resigned. That's the way things happen. Now, I was in jail with these gang members. One of them was an OG member, the original gang member, they call OG, original gang member. This was one of the Watts riots where they started from, several gangs out there. Now, this was the Crips, I think it was, or the Bloods. I think it was the guy with the Crips, as I recall. And he was a little bit older, man. He took to me and talking to me and stuff in the prison. And they had written a book. I had written a book about being a gang member, and he showed it to me. I read it. Otis was in there, and he read it and laughed. And the guy that busted John Gotti was laughing about it and laughing about him and all this stuff. And he says, oh, Stu, he says, when I got out and they found out that I was getting out and it was pretty much going to be done, he says, oh, Stu, he says, when you get to the streets, go down on such and such, Koufax or wherever it was. He says, you go down there such and such, and he says, you tell the guys down there that I sent you down there, and they'll give you $100 apiece. You need some money in your pocket when you get out. I thought about doing it, but I didn't. He was an OG, original gang member. He told me Daddy Bush supplied him with the drugs, and they were laundering the money through Silverado Savings Loan, and that's how they got fucking caught. And when they went upside down, they covered everything up because Bill Black, the University of Missouri, Kansas City professor of law, and his wife was a professor of law in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and they come back and forth between Kansas City and there every day or every weekend. He's the one that shut down Silverado Savings Loan. There's an interview on my bar. I posted it up, I think, last October, September. I posted his interview with me. And like he said, he couldn't get nothing done. They kept shutting everybody out that was trying to do their jobs. Good guys. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's I think where we're at. We're at 45 minutes. Anyone have any closing thoughts?
Joe, are you still with us? Joe? Or did he get cut off? Jeff, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep,
go ahead.
I'm here, guys.
I think Joe got cut off. Go ahead. Jeff, you got it.
What do you think, Joffrey? Essentially, what I've made is a case for sedition, treason, they're really too kind of words for what's happened in America. And when you get a magazine that is bragging about it, and not only bragging, but mocking all of us, and they're essentially saying that it's all over. No. America is a captured operation, tag it, bag it, and we're going to bring this thing down. And the three of us, and you know, I admit it, I didn't ever vote for the guy, but that being said, it's what I will say about the conservatives is they've always at least listened to me. I cannot say the same thing for the left. In fact, you know, my friends on the left almost seem to be more and more into virtue signaling and into the political correctness that that I abhor. I just, this idea that that in some way the people behind the curtain, the globalists, the cabal, the Illuminati, the Nosferatu, that they care about us is so outrageously stupid. I don't know. I'm running on fumes, but that's... Go ahead.
If I may add about Time Magazine, you know, they used to do stories for me years ago before they got bought out. Now they're bought out by Viacom, which owns CBS News. Now, Milman and Brofman and Daddy Bush bought out the in 1992, they bought out the Hollywood. Milman ended up with Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and ABC News. Now, who owns ABC News now, or CBS News, and owns Time Magazine is Viacom. Viacom created Air Force One to put them on the map. Milman financed it to get them on the map so they could later go public. Viacom, in 1992, Daddy Bush, still as President of the United States, signed an executive order that allowed individuals no longer just, you could own into three radio stations, or a corporation could own into like three or whatever. He made it unlimited, executive order, took it off. This got away, this got all of the talk show hosts, the Christian radios and so forth, knocked them basically out of business for the future. Because now Viacom controls most of the radio stations in America. Viacom's son, or the guy that runs Viacom, is named James Lyons. His father is James M. Lyons, who sits on the board of directors of MDC Holdings in Denver, the parent company of Silverado. James M. Lyons is Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's attorney when they were first Lesbo and President of the United States. I just thought I'd throw that out there. It keeps coming back to the people controlling the friggin' money. What can we do? They stole it from us. We can legally claw it back if we can find a place to legally do it. Good God, how much money would that put back in the states and the Fed and the whole bit? There wouldn't be taxation for 10 years. I figured it out one day, a rough estimate. If the government sold it off for 50 cents on the dollar back to only Americans could buy into it, and say Walmart's, they confiscate all the Walmarts because they're involved in drugs. You're involved with one penny of drug, they could take everything you got. That's how we do it, because it's all drug related. Take it back. Now, what happens? The Walmarts, some guy, Jeff, gets together with a couple of his buddies and he buys a Walmart where he lives. And they turn it into a big grocery store or department store or whatever it is, like it is. All of a sudden, those are back in the hands of the people. The economy's back in the hands of the people. And if the government sold it off for 50 cents on the dollar, I mean, we would have tremendous amounts of new wealth. Tremendous amounts. And it would take the control away from the devil. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I think what we're longing for, what we're yearning for is truth and it evades us because we are up against a machine that is very well refined and very well oiled, running very smoothly against, diametrically opposed against truth and honesty and integrity. And so we're muddling around in a world where, as truth seekers and Christians, it's hard for us to get any footing it's hard for us to lock in any real confidence in a system that we know is faulty. And so we fight for this truth, and we know that we don't necessarily see the truth until the thousand-year millennial reign on how politics and how life and how the earth should be run with Christ rules for a thousand years in the kind of world where they're not going to like it, because there are going to be people who come up during that time frame who don't know Christ personally as Savior, but yet they're born into the time when he's reigning for that thousand years. And but yet then we get our turn, and our turn is a thousand-year reign with him, where we see true rule of law. We see the truth finally come out. We can take a breath of fresh air and realize, look at this, how it should be. And I think that's what we yearn for, is what it could be. And we want what could be. But yet we have to pacify ourselves for a time in a world that isn't the intention of how God wants it to be, but this is man run amok. And this is rule of law being overthrown, and this is serve thyself, and this is a self-consuming society, and God tells us in the last days, well, men will become lovers of self. This is all designed to fatten up those on the top, their families, perpetual relationships and business endeavors that really do not filter down to the many, just for the few. So we have to endure this time frame in a prayerful mindset, knowing, hey, we don't necessarily win this battle, but we're going to win the war. And I guess that's why I'm looking at this thing. You know, we have a job to do. We don't stop. We don't quit. We don't slow down. We stay faithful to our master, and that's our God, and come what may. But we do know better times are coming. It's just maybe not, you know, right around the corner for us.
It was very well said, Jeff. Very well said. Paul, you want to add anything before we close out?
Yeah, I think I've just been, I got too many things going on at once, and my mind's a little cluttered, and I do apologize, guys. So yeah. I better sum up here, and we'll be back again soon.
Okay, which one do you want to close this in prayer? Jeff, you want to close it, or Paul?
Sure, sure. God, we have you. We have you. We can turn to you. You will not fail us. We do not put our confidence in men. We will be let down. We'll be disappointed. We've seen kings, and the world was clamored in the ancient days. They wanted a ruler. They wanted a king. Give us a king. And you know, all those time frames, Lord, have been a disappointment, because man has put his trust in man. I would just ask you would strengthen, refine us, shape us and mold us, make us to be the people you want us to be, and not self-serving, but looking to others to help, to love, to show your mercy, to show your care and your kindness. I would pray that you would protect us all. We're dearly a great need of it, because we have an adversary that's roaming this earth like a roaring lion looking whom he may devour. And that doesn't stop. It's a continual fight against evil. And yet good men cannot just lay down and give up. Then we give in to it. We can't do that. So remind us to be prayerful. Remind us to shine the light of the gospel, the blood of Jesus Christ, that gives men souls life and gives men life eternal. That's the only thing, really, that we should be seeking, is eternity with you. This is temporary. We know it. Help us to live in it. Help us to be fruitful in it. Help us to be responsible in it. But I would ask that you would protect us, protect the listeners and the audience, too, those people who have needs, God, that you see. I pray that they draw near to you, that you might draw near to them. All of us need that. We need your guiding hand. And just, again, we ask for your grace, your mercy to live another day. And we thank you for Stu and Paul and Joel. Thank you for these men who get up there and wave the banner of truth. Sometimes it's not always what we want to hear, but truth is truth, and we need it, and we'll keep pursuing it. And we ask this in your most holy name. Amen.
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 Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Jeff, very much, both of you.
Yep.
And thank you, Joe.
Bye. Take care.
Have a good one.
Yep, Mike.